Chapter 2. For a long while he could not find out what the time was when he woke. Whether it was the twilight of dawn or of evening, it was still dark in his room. He could not decide how long he had slept, but felt that his sleep was not healthy sleep. Coming to himself, he passed his hand over his face as though shaking off sleep and the visions of the night. But when he tried to step on the floor, he felt as though his whole body were shattered, and his exhausted limbs refused to obey him. His head ached and was going round, and he was alternately shivering and feverish. Memory returned with consciousness, and his heart quivered when in one instant he lived through in memory the whole of the past night. His heart beat as violently in response to his thoughts. His sensations were as burning, as fresh, as though not a night, not long hours, but 1 minute had passed since Katerina had gone away. He felt as though his eyes were still wet with tears, or were they new, fresh tears that rushed like a spring from his burning soul. And, strange to say, his agonies were even sweet to him, though he dimly felt all over that he could not endure such violence of feeling again. There was a moment when he was almost conscious of death and was ready to meet it as a welcome guest. His sensations were so overstrained. His passion surged up with such violence on waking, such ecstasy took possession of his soul, that life, quickened by its intensity, seemed on the point of breaking, of being shattered, of flickering out in 1 minute and being quenched forever. Almost at that instant, as though in answer to his anguish, in answer to his quivering heart, the familiar, mellow, silvery voice of Katerina rang out, like that inner music known to a man's soul in hours of joy, in hours of tranquil happiness. Close beside him, almost over his pillow, began a song, at first soft and melancholy. Her voice rose and fell, dying away abruptly as though hiding in itself, and tenderly crooning over its anguish of unsatisfied, smothered desire, hopelessly concealed in the grieving heart. Then again it flowed into a nightingale's trills, and, quivering and glowing with unrestrained passion, melted into a perfect sea of ecstasy, a sea of mighty, boundless sound, like the first moment of the bliss of love. Ordynov distinguished the words, too. They were simple, sincere, composed long ago with direct, calm, pure, clear feeling. But he forgot them. He heard only the sounds. Through the simple, naive verses of the song flashed other words, resounding with all the yearning that filled his bosom, responding to the most secret subtleties of his passion, which he could not comprehend, though they echoed to him clearly with full consciousness of it. And at one moment he heard the last moan of a heart swooning helplessly in passion. Then he heard the joy of a will, and the spirit breaking its chains and rushing brightly and freely into the boundless ocean of unfettered love. Then he heard the first vow of the beloved, with fragrant shame at the first blush on her face, with prayers, with tears, with mysterious, timid murmuring. Then the passion of the Bacchante, proud and rejoicing in its strength, unveiled, undisguised, turning her drunken eyes about her with a ringing laugh. Ordynov could not endure the end of the song, and he got up from the bed. The song at once died away. "Good morning and good day are over, my beloved," Katerina's voice rang out. "Good evening to you. Get up. Come into us. Wake up to bright joy. We expect you. I and the master, both good people, your willing servants. Quench hatred with love, if your heart is still resentful. Say a friendly word." Ordynov had already gone out of his room at her first call, and scarcely realized that he was going into the landlord's bedroom. The door opened before him, And, bright as sunshine, the golden smile of his strange landlady flashed upon him. At that instant, he saw, he heard, no one but her. In one moment, his whole life, his whole joy melted into one thing in his heart, the bright image of his Katerina. 2 dawns have passed, she said, giving him her hands, since we said farewell. The second is dying now. Look out of the window, like the 2 dawns in the soul of a maiden. Katerina added, laughing, the one that flushes her face with its first shame, when first her lonely maiden heart speaks in her bosom, while the other, when a maiden forgets her first shame, glows like fire, stifles her maiden heart and drives the red blood to her face. Come, come into our home, good young man. Why do you stand in the doorway? Honour and love to you, and a greeting from the master. With a laugh ringing like music, she took Ordynov's hand and led him into the room. His heart was overwhelmed with timidity. All the fever, all the fire raging in his bosom was quenched and died down in one instant, and for one instant he dropped his eyes in confusion and was afraid to look at her. He felt that she was so marvellously beautiful that his heart could not endure her burning eyes. He had never seen his Katerina like this. For the first time, laughter and gaiety were sparkling on her face and drying the mournful tears on her black eyelashes. His hand trembled in her hand, and if he had raised his eyes, he would have seen that Katerina, with a triumphant smile, had fastened her clear eyes on his face, which was clouded with confusion and passion. "Get up, old man," she said at last, as though waking up. "Say a word of welcome to our guest, a guest who is like a brother. Get up, you proud, unbending old man. Get up, now. Take your guest by his white hand and make him sit down to the table." Ordynov raised his eyes, and seemed only then to come to himself. Only then he thought of Murin. The old man's eyes, looking as though dimmed by the approach of death, were staring at him fixedly, and with a pang in his heart, he remembered those eyes glittering at him last time from black overhanging brows, contracted as now with pain and anger. There was a slight dizziness in his head. He looked round him, and only then realized everything clearly and distinctly. Murin was still lying on the bed, but he was partly dressed, and had already been up and out that morning. As before, he had a red kerchief tied round his neck, he had slippers on his feet. His attack was evidently over, only his face was terribly pale and yellow. Katerina was standing by his bed, her hand leaning on the table, watching them both intently. But the smile of welcome did not leave her face. It seemed as though everything had been done at a sign from her.
"Yes, it's you," said Murin, raising himself up and sitting on the bed. "You are my lodger. I must beg your pardon, sir. I have sinned and wronged you all unknowingly, playing tricks with my gun the other day. Who could tell that you too were stricken by grievous illness? It happens to me at times," he added, in a hoarse, ailing voice, frowning and unconsciously looking away from Ordynov. "My trouble comes upon me like a thief in the night without knocking at the gate. I almost thrust a knife into her bosom the other day," he brought out, nodding towards Katerina. "I am ill. A fit comes, seizes me. Well, that's enough. Sit down. You will be our guest."
Ordynov was still staring at him intently.
"Sit down, sit down," the old man shouted impatiently. "Sit down, if that will please her. So, you are brother and sister, born of the same mother. You are as fond of one another as lovers."
Ordynov sat down.
"You see what a fine sister you've got,"
the old man went on, laughing, and he showed two rows of white, perfectly sound teeth.
"Be fond of one another, my dears. Is your sister beautiful, sir? Tell me, answer. Come, look how her cheeks are burning. Come, look round. Sing the praises of her beauty to all the world. Show that your heart is aching for her."
Ordynov frowned and looked angrily at the old man, who flinched under his eyes. A blind fury surged up in Ordynov's heart. By some animal instinct, he felt near him a mortal foe. He could not understand what was happening to him. His reason refused to serve him.
"Don't look," said a voice behind him.
Ordynov looked round.
"Don't look! Don't look, I tell you, if the devil is tempting you! Have pity on your love," said Katerina, laughing,
and suddenly from behind she covered his eyes with her hands, then at once took away her hands and hid her own face in them. But the colour in her face seemed to show through her fingers. She removed her hands and, still glowing like fire, tried to meet their laughter and inquisitive eyes brightly and without a tremor. But both looked at her in silence. Ordynov, with the stupefaction of love, as though it were the first time such terrible beauty had stabbed his heart, the old man coldly and attentively. Nothing was to be seen in his pale face, except that his lips turned blue and quivered faintly. Katerina went up to the old man, no longer laughing, and began clearing away the books, papers, inkstand, everything that was on the table, and putting them all on the window-sill. Her breathing was hurried and uneven, and from time to time she drew an eager breath as though her heart were oppressed. Her full bosom heaved and fell like a wave on the seashore. She dropped her eyes, and her pitch-black eyelashes gleamed on her bright cheeks like sharp needles.
"A maiden queen," said the old man.
"My sovereign," whispered Ordynov, quivering all over.
He came to his senses, feeling the old man's eyes upon him. His glance flashed upon him for an instant like lightning, greedily spiteful, coldly contemptuous. Ordynov would have got up from his seat, but some unseen power seemed to fetter his legs. He sat down again. At times he pinched his hand, as though not believing in reality. He felt as though he were being strangled by a nightmare, and as though his eyes were still closed in a miserable, feverish sleep. But, strange to say, he did not want to wake up. Katerina took the old cloth off the table, then opened a chest, took out of it a sumptuous cloth embroidered in gold and bright silks, and put it on the table. Then she took out of the cupboard an old-fashioned, ancestral-looking casket, set it in the middle of the table, and took out of it three silver goblets, one for the master, one for the visitor, and one for herself. Then, with a grave, almost pensive air, she looked at the old man and the visitor.
"Is one of us dear to someone, or not dear?" she said. "If anyone is not dear to someone, he is dear to me, and shall drink my goblet with me. Each of you is dear to me as my own brother. So let us all drink to love and concord."
"Drink, and drown dark fancies in the wine," said the old man in a changed voice. "Pour it out, Katerina."
"Do you bid me pour?" asked Katerina, looking at Ordynov. Ordynov held out his goblet in silence.
"Stay. If one has a secret and a fancy, may his wishes come true," said the old man, raising his goblet. All clinked their goblets and drank.
"Let me now drink with you, old man," said Katerina, turning to the landlord. "Let us drink if your heart is kindly to me. Let us drink to past happiness. Let us send a greeting to the years we have spent. Let us celebrate our happiness with heart and with love. Bid me fill your goblet, if your heart is warm to me.
Your wine is strong, my love, but you scarcely wet your lips, said the old man, laughing and holding out his goblet again.
Well, I will sip it, but you drink it to the bottom. Why live, old man, brooding on gloomy thoughts? Gloomy thoughts only make the heart ache. Thought calls for sorrow. With happiness one can live without thinking. Drink, old man, she went on. Drown your thoughts.
A great deal of sorrow must have fermented within you, since you arm yourself against it like this. So you want to make an end of it all at once, my white dove. I drink with you, Katya. And have you a sorrow, sir, if you allow me to ask?
If I have, I keep it to myself, muttered Ordynov, keeping his eyes fixed on Katerina. Do you hear, old man? For a long while I did not know myself, did not remember, but the time came I remembered all and recalled it. All that has passed, I have passed through again in my unsatisfied soul.
Yes, it is grievous if one begins looking into the past only, said the old man dreamily. What is past is like wine that is drunk. What happiness is there in the past? The coat is worn out, and away with it.
One must get a new one, Katerina chimed in with a strained laugh, while two big tears like diamonds hung on her eyelashes. One cannot live down a lifetime in 1 minute, and a girl's heart is eager for life. There is no keeping pace with it. Do you understand, old man? Look, I have buried my tear in your goblet.
And did you buy much happiness with your sorrow? Said Ordynov, and his voice quivered with emotion.
So you must have a great deal of your own for sale, answered the old man, that you put your spoke in unasked.
And he laughed, a spiteful, noiseless laugh, looking insolently at Ordynov. What I have sold it for I have had, answered Katerina, in a voice that sounded vexed and offended. One thinks it much, another little. One wants to give all to take nothing, another promises nothing, and yet the submissive heart follows him. Do not you reproach anyone, she went on, looking sadly at Ordynov. One man is like this, and another is different, and as though one knew why the soul yearns towards anyone. Fill your goblet, old man. Drink to the happiness of your dear daughter, your meek, obedient slave, as I was when first I knew you. Raise your goblet.
So be it. Fill yours too, said the old man, taking the wine.
Stay, old man. Put off drinking, and let us say a word first. Katerina put her elbows on the table and looked intently with passionate, kindling eyes at the old man. A strange determination gleamed in her eyes, but all her movements were calm. Her gestures were abrupt, unexpected, rapid. She was all as if on fire, and it was marvellous. But her beauty seemed to grow with her emotion, her animation. Her hurried breath, slightly inflating her nostrils, floated from her lips, half opened in a smile which showed two rows of teeth, white and even as pearls. Her bosom heaved. Her coil of hair, twisted three times round her head, fell carelessly over her left ear and covered part of her glowing cheek. Drops of sweat came out on her temples. "Tell me my fortune, old man. Tell me my fortune, my father, before you drown your mind in drink. Here is my white palm for you. Not for nothing do the folks call you a wizard. You have studied by the book and know all of the black art. Look, old man, tell me all my pitiful fate, only mind you don't tell a lie. Come, tell me as you know it. Will there be happiness for your daughter, or will you not forgive her, but call down upon her path an evil, sorrowful fate? Tell me whether I shall have a warm corner for my home, or, like a bird of passage, shall be seeking among good people for a home, a lonely orphan all my life. Tell me who is my enemy, Who is preparing love for me? Who is plotting against me? Tell me, will my warm young heart open its life in solitude and languish to the end, or will it find itself a mate and beat joyfully in tune with it till new sorrow comes? Tell me for once, old man, in what blue sky beyond far seas and forests my bright falcon lives, and is he keenly searching for his mate, and is he waiting lovingly, and will he love me fondly? Will he soon be tired of me? Will he deceive me or not deceive me? And once for all and all together, tell me for the last time, old man, am I long to while away the time with you, to sit in a comfortless corner, to read dark books? And when am I, old man, to bow low to you, to say farewell for good and all, to thank you for your bread and salt, for giving me to drink and eat, for telling me your tales? But mind, tell all the truth, do not lie. The time has come. Stand up for yourself. Her excitement grew greater and greater up to the last word, when suddenly her voice broke with emotion, as though her heart were carried away by some inner tempest. Her eyes flashed, and her upper lip faintly quivered. A spiteful jeer could be heard, hiding like a snake under every word, but yet there was the ring of tears in her laughter. She bent across the table to the old man and gazed with eager intentness into his lustreless eyes. Ordynov heard her heart suddenly begin beating when she finished. He cried out with ecstasy when he glanced at her and was getting up from the bench. But a flitting, momentary glance from the old man riveted him to his seat again, a strange mingling of contempt, mocking, impatient, angry uneasiness, and at the same time sly, spiteful curiosity gleamed in his passing momentary glance, which every time made Ordynov shudder and filled his heart with annoyance, vexation, and helpless anger. Thoughtfully, and with a sort of mournful curiosity, the old man looked at his Katerina. His heart was stung. Words had been uttered, but not an eyebrow stirred upon his face. He only smiled when she finished.
"You want to know a great deal at once, my full-fledged nestling, my fluttering bird. Better fill me a deep goblet and let us drink first to peace and goodwill, or I may spoil my forecast through someone's black, evil eye. Mighty is the devil. Sin is never far off."
He raised his goblet and drank. The more wine he drank, the paler he grew. His eyes burned like red coals. Evidently the feverish light of them and the sudden death-like blueness of his face were signs that another fit was imminent. The wine was strong, so that after emptying one goblet, Ordynov's sight grew more and more blurred. His feverishly inflamed blood could bear no more. It rushed to his heart, troubled and dimmed his reason. His uneasiness grew more and more intense. To relieve his growing excitement, he filled his goblet and sipped it again, without knowing what he was doing, and the blood raced even more rapidly through his veins. He was as though in delirium, and, straining his attention to the utmost, he could hardly follow what was passing between his strange landlord and landlady. The old man knocked his goblet with a ringing sound against the table.
"Fill it, Katerina," he cried. "Fill it again, bad daughter. Fill it to the brim. Lay the old man in peace and have done with him. That's it. Pour out more. Pour it out, my beauty. Let us drink together. Why have you drunk so little, or have my eyes deceived me?"
Katerina made him some answer, but Ordynov could not quite hear what she said. The old man did not let her finish. He caught hold of her hand as though he were incapable of restraining all that was weighing on his heart. His face was pale. His eyes at one moment were dim,
at the next were flashing with fire. His lips quivered and turned white, and in an uneven, troubled voice, in which at moments there was a flash of strange ecstasy, he said to her, "Give me your little hand, my beauty. Let me tell your fortune. I will tell the whole truth. I am truly a wizard, so you are not mistaken, Katerina. Your golden heart said truly that I alone am its wizard, and will not hide the truth from it, the simple, girlish heart. But one thing you don't see. It's not for me, a wizard, to teach you wisdom. Wisdom is not what a maiden wants, and she hears the whole truth yet seems not to know, not to understand. Her head is a subtle serpent, though her heart is melting in tears. She will find out for herself, will thread her way between troubles, will keep her cunning will. Something she can win by sense, and where she cannot win by sense, she will dazzle by beauty, will intoxicate men's minds with her black eye. Beauty conquers strength. Even the heart of iron will be rent asunder. Will you have grief and sorrow? Heavy is the sorrow of man, but trouble is not for the weak heart. Trouble is close friends with the strong heart. Stealthily, it sheds a bloody tear, but does not go begging to good people for shameful comfort. Your grief, girl, is like a print in the sand. The rain washes it away, the sun dries it, the stormy wind lifts it and blows it away. Let me tell you more. Let me tell your fortune. Whoever loves you, you will be a slave to him. You will bind your freedom yourself. You will give yourself in pledge and will not take yourself back. You will not know how to cease to love in due time. You will sow a grain and your destroyer will take back a whole ear. My tender child, my little golden head, you buried your pearl of a tear in my goblet, but you could not be content with that. At once you shed 100. You uttered no more sweet words and boasted of your sad life. And there was no need for you to grieve over it. The tear, the dew of heaven, it will come back to you with interest, your pearly tear, in the woeful night when cruel sorrow, evil fancies will gnaw your heart. Then for that same tear, another's tear will drop upon your warm heart. Not a warm tear, but a tear of blood, like molten lead. It will turn your white bosom to blood, and until the dreary, heavy morning that comes on gloomy days, you will toss in your little bed, shedding your heart's blood, and will not heal your fresh wound till another dawn. Fill my goblet, Katerina. Fill it again, my dove. Fill it for my sage counsel, and no need to waste more words." His voice grew weak and trembling. Sobs seemed on the point of breaking from his bosom. He poured out the wine and greedily drained another goblet. Then he brought the goblet down on the table again with a bang. His dim eyes once more gleamed with flame.
"Ah! Live as you may," he shouted. "What's past is gone and done with. Fill up the heavy goblet, fill it up, that it may smite the rebellious head from its shoulders, that the whole soul may be dead with it. Lay me out for the long night that has no morning, and let my memory vanish altogether. What is drunk is lived and done with. So the merchant's wares have grown stale, have lain by too long. He must give them away for nothing. But the merchant would not of his free will have sold it below its price. The blood of his foe should be spilt, and the innocent blood should be shed too. and that customer should have laid down his lost soul into the bargain. Fill my goblet. Fill it again, Katerina."
But the hand that held the goblet seemed to stiffen and did not move. His breathing was laboured and difficult. His head sank back. For the last time, he fixed his lustreless eyes on Ordynov. But his eyes, too, grew dim at last, and his eyelids dropped as though they were made of lead. A deadly pallor overspread his face. For some time, his lips twitched and quivered, as though still trying to articulate. And suddenly, a big, hot tear hung on his eyelash, broke, and slowly ran down his pale cheek. Ordynov could bear no more. He got up, and, reeling, took a step forward, went up to Katerina and clutched her hand. But she seemed not to notice him, and did not even glance at him, as though she did not recognize him. She, too, seemed to have lost consciousness, as though one thought, one fixed idea, had entirely absorbed her. She sank on the bosom of the sleeping old man, twined her white arm round his neck, and gazed with glowing, feverish eyes, as though they were riveted on him. She did not seem to feel Ordynov taking her hand. At last she turned her head towards him, and bent upon him a prolonged, searching gaze. It seemed as though at last she understood, and a bitter, astonished smile came wearily, as it were painfully, on her lips.
"Go away. Go away," she whispered. "You are drunk and wicked. You are not a guest for me."
Then she turned again to the old man and riveted her eyes upon him. She seemed, as it were, gloating over every breath he took and soothing his slumber with her eyes. She seemed afraid to breathe, checking her full throbbing heart. And there was such frenzied admiration in her face that at once despair, fury, and insatiable anger seized Ordynov's spirit.
"Katerina! Katerina!" he called, seizing her hand as though in a vice.
A look of pain passed over her face. She raised her head again and looked at him with such mockery, with such contemptuous haughtiness, that he could scarcely stand upon his feet. Then she pointed to the sleeping old man, and, as though all his enemy's mockery had passed into her eyes, she bent again a taunting glance at Ordynov that sent an icy shiver to his heart.
"What? He will murder me, I suppose," said Ordynov, beside himself with fury. Some demon seemed to whisper in his ear that he understood her, and his whole heart laughed at Katerina's fixed idea. "I will buy you, my beauty, from your merchant, if you want my soul. No fear. He won't kill me."
A fixed laugh that froze Ordynov's whole being remained upon Katerina's face. Its boundless irony rent his heart. Not knowing what he was doing, hardly conscious, he leaned against the wall and took from a nail the old man's expensive, old-fashioned knife. A look of amazement seemed to come into Katerina's face, but at the same time anger and contempt were reflected with the same force in her eyes. Ordynov turned sick, looking at her. He felt as though someone were thrusting, urging his frenzied hand to madness. He drew out the knife. Katerina watched him, motionless, holding her breath. He glanced at the old man. At that moment, he fancied that one of the old man's eyes opened and looked at him, laughing. Their eyes met. For some minutes, Ordynov gazed at him fixedly. Suddenly, he fancied that the old man's whole face began laughing, and that a diabolical, soul-freezing chuckle resounded at last through the room. A hideous, dark thought crawled like a snake into his head. He shuddered. The knife fell from his hands and dropped with a clang upon the floor. Katerina uttered a shriek, as though awaking from oblivion, from a nightmare, from a heavy, immovable vision. The old man, very pale, slowly got up from the bed and angrily kicked the knife into the corner of the room. Katerina stood pale, death-like, immovable. Her eyelids were closing. Her face was convulsed by a vague, insufferable pain. She hid her face in her hands, and, with a shriek that rent the heart, sank almost breathless at the old man's feet.
"Alyosha! Alyosha!"
broke from her gasping bosom. The old man seized her in his powerful arms and almost crushed her on his breast, but when she hid her head upon his heart, every feature in the old man's face worked with such undisguised, shameless laughter that Ordynov's whole soul was overwhelmed with horror. Deception, calculation, cold, jealous tyranny, and horror at the poor broken heart. That was what he read in that laugh, that shamelessly threw off all disguise.
"She's mad," he whispered, quivering like a leaf, and, numb with terror, he ran out of the flat.